Aye, we can, being careful. The captain hustled off to tell his crew. Jackal called Roar over. The Hispartan galleys, he said. How tall are their masts? 9 vara to the pulgada, came the answer without hesitation. Oates didn't know his measures the way he should, though Beryl had tried to drum them into his skull. Roar sounded damn certain, though. Jackal nodded at the approaching bridge. Reckon they can navigate that? The mongrel shipwright squinted hard at the top of the arch. You're having to ponder it, Jackal said with relish, which means so will the frails. I don't know much about ships, but a fool can see they'll have to come through slower than us, and one at a time.
Yes, but sending 2 ships means they suspect a trap, Roar said.
Jackal's smile threatened to split his face. The second ship is the trap. Oates opened his mouth to ask Jack what the hells he was planning, but was cut off before he voiced the first word. Which of you two is the stronger swimmer? Jackal asked Roar, pointing up to the mast. Roar's scowl deepened.
Rant, she's a damn eel. Why?
Jackal didn't answer, the question abandoned and forgotten as their prow pierced the shadow beneath the bridge. Burgos issued small, encouraging commands to his crew as they guided the vessel through the gullet of the arch. Oates reckoned the tips of their oars were a spear's length from the stone walls. He looked up and saw Rant still perched atop the mast. Boosting herself higher, a move that made Oates's asshole clench, she stretched an arm up toward the curved roof. She couldn't touch it, but the angle made it impossible to see how short she was. She slid back to a less gut-tingling spot on the mast and called down to the deck.
Frails will make it, she said,
the words directed at her brother. Roar huffed.
Have to ship their oars, though. Pole through.
His stare lowered to rest on Jackal.
That's if they come through at all. They could lay anchor and wait us out. Smartest course, especially if they know there's nowhere for us to go. Even if they don't know about the block ahead, they'll expect the rest of the fleet to head us off. They believe they have us pinned, and one way or another, they're right.
We won't know what they'll do until they do it, Jackal said, watching the tunnel's walls pass with languid ease. The Mariposa was over halfway through. Whatever it is, we'll have bought enough time.
Time? Oates grunted.
For what?
To get you, Thistle, and the boy on land, Jackal told him. Oates felt his guts sink. More like they were punched down into his cods. He hadn't expected that. Jack had read his damn mind, or overheard Sluggard, or just knew it was what had to be done. He wasn't crazy. Never had been. Oates should have known better, trusted in all he knew of this mongrel, not just what Slug thought he knew from a far, far shorter brotherhood. Oates should have been relieved, but it was a colder, cutting feeling that seized him. Jackal was going to take on the frails, and he was going to do it without Oates. It had never occurred to him to do it another way. Before setting loose whatever wild hog he'd bred in his canny mind, he was first seeing to the safety of the innocent, the vulnerable, the weak. Oates strode back to Sluggard.
Get Pala and Ugfuck ready to disembark, he said.
His next words murdered the relief in Sluggard's face.
You're taking Thistle and Murrow away from here.
Me? What about you?
I'm going to make sure these frails don't reach Kalbarka.
Appalled, Sluggard shook his kerchiefed head.
Oates, don't...
Don't what, Slug? Forget who I am? I'm the chief's right hand, and I just gave you a command.
Chapter 14 Men's voices sawed through the bridge tunnel. Orders were barked. Commands yelled. Responses shouted. They sounded strained, maneuvering their ship through the confining arch. Mostly, they sounded close. Oates feared they would hear his stuttered breathing. The climb had sucked a sow's tit. He was winded, shaky in his limbs and lungs. Eyes clenched, he tried to hold his breath, but it only made things worse.
flat on his back atop the bridge, he waited, the sun warming him in his bed of ancient stones. His stock bow was across his crotch, drawn and loaded, held with care to prevent the tickler from touching the ground. Last thing they needed was Roar getting feathered by mischance. The shipwright was farther down the bridge to the left, hopefully breathing softer than Oates was. He'd certainly completed the climb faster, the surly fuck. Oates had positioned himself near a break in the bridge's northern parapet so he could peer down to the river if the time came. Wasn't difficult to find such a spy hole. The crumbling span had more gaps than a hag's smile. For now, he stayed still and out of sight, listening as the frail's first galley pushed unseen through the arch beneath him. He knew the second ship was somewhere on the other side of the bridge, but whether it would follow the first or wait, he didn't know. Neither did Jackal, so he'd planned for either outcome. When the Mariposa came through the arch and made for shore at speed, Jack had told them their parts in an unbroken stream of instructions, continuing to speak even as they moored on the eastern bank to offload the hogs. Oates had listened closely, bustling about the deck with everyone else, getting Ugfuck down the ramp and onto shore, using the hurried labor to avoid looking Thistle in the eye. He'd helped her into the saddle and lifted Murrow up to sit before her.
"You take care of them until I join you," he'd told Ug, knuckling the hog between the eyes. It was all the parting words he dared offer.
Not wanting to give Murrow time to figure it out, to panic, to fuss, Oates turned and hustled down the bank to the bridge abutment. Roar was already clambering up. Grabbing the first likely handhold in the old, pitted masonry, Oates tensed to begin the climb, but paused to give the backsides of the swiftly trotting hogs a look. Sluggard rode at the front, leading the riderless barbarians. Mean Old Man, an aging and seasoned animal, followed without need of a tether. Ug bore Thistle and Murrow at the rear. By the time Oates had reached his third handhold, they were gone from sight. Fuck that climb. He was still panting. The voices broke free of the tunnel. They came sharper now, clearer, no longer constrained by the hollow stone vault. Oates kept his eyes closed, but he knew what the frails would see, what Jackal wanted them to see. The Mariposa, moored at the eastern shore, less than a thrum shot from the bridge. Burgos and his crew would be going about their sailor business on deck, putting on a good show of resting for the day. Soon, a call came from the war galley, a single voice, louder than any so far. Someone, a captain most likely, hailing the smaller vessel, a vessel that contained nothing but a gaggle of sun-cured coffin dodgers. No mongrels or barbarians in sight. Burgos answered, though distance and Oates's own breath muddled the words. He didn't need to hear the exchange. The Hisparthan's demands were as certain as a mongrel's morning erection. "Who are you? What's your purpose on the river? Why did you run?" All the same arrogant blue-blood hog shit those who figured they were born to power had spewed since the first frail wore a crown. Burgos's answers hardly mattered.
"We're nothing but swampers, Lord. On our way down to the Maiden, Lord. Thought it best to yield the river, Lord. Not for us to impede Her Majesty's ships, Lord."
Didn't fucking matter what was said, but how. It was the Lord that was most important, dribbled from a downcast chin. If Burgos had doffed his skull cap and wrung it in humble, nervous hands, the noble captain on the galley was like to spend in his breeches. With luck, the man's eyes weren't keen enough to see the outlaw brands on the pirate's cheeks. If so, he might get freshly flushed and need to harass Burgos a bit longer. So long as they were merely speaking, Oates could do nothing but lie there and wait. His mind drifted to Thistle, to Murrow. Did they understand why he'd not gone with them? Fool-ass thing to wonder. Of course the boy didn't. He'd have only the thrill of the ride and whatever comforts Thistle provided to keep him from fearing that Oates was gone for good. And Thistle herself? She'd served the hoof nearly as long as Oates. She knew the life, the creed. She'd lost a lover to it already. And Oates wasn't Rounth. The only time he'd spent with Thistle in bed was as a fucking invalid. Her feeding him, changing his bandages, his soiled and stinking sheets. Hells, he was another child in her care, an ass to be wiped. She cared for him, but in the same way she loved the orphans. That was all. How could it be any other way? Besides, he was a bastard, gray and true. More than that, he was Jackal's brother, and not because their skin bore the same tattoos. They were bonded by more than ink and oaths, the two of them. It would be that way until one of them went to the dust. Fair wager it wouldn't be the fucking arm of Atukan first. That was fine by Oates. Spare him the pain of surviving, of watching those he loved fill a grave or fuel a pyre. What was taking so long? The Frail should have moved on or tried to take the pirates prisoner by now. Jackal had said they'd do one or the other. Those were the outcomes they'd planned for, not languishing all the length of the day while some captain tried to reckon the beginning of the fucking world with Burgos. Oates lifted his chin as far as it would go and craned his neck to peer through the hole in the parapet, careful not to move anything but his head. This whole scheme would go to shit the moment some falcon-eyed son of a cunt on deck spied movement on the bridge and shouted a warning. Oates's view was uncomfortable, limited, and inverted, but he could make out enough to worry. The Hisparthan war galley sat in the middle of the channel, its prow drifting a bit toward the bank. Double-masted, it was well over twice the length of the moored Mariposa, and wider by half. Its banks of oars had been drawn into the belly of the beast, the rowers hidden from sight by an upper deck. Was it men or mongrels on those unseen benches? No way to tell. But it wasn't his job to find out. The upper deck held no such mystery. It was covered with armed frails. Had to be 100 men or more. Swords and bucklers filled most hands, but Oates saw about a third carried stock bows. More than enough to kill Burgos and his crew in a single volley. Amidships, a group of 10 or so armored men with halberds surrounded the source of the voice droning at Burgos, standing on his own deck, perhaps a javelin's toss away. His cap wasn't in his hands, but his posture was meek enough as he listened to whatever was being said. Oates's neck was cramping by the time Burgos spoke. His words didn't reach the top of the bridge, but he made several gestures upriver and to the east. When his hand waved up at the bridge, Oates snatched his head away from the hole. Sweat itched in his beard, and fear chewed at his gut. Had the old outlaw given them up? There was nothing in Jack's plan for that. The hum of voices on the war galley increased. Oates stared at the sky as he heard the creak of wood, the groan of rope, the smack of oars. The ship must have come about, and faster than he would have thought for such a big boat, for soon enough it was passing beneath once more. Oates let his head loll left and met Roar's gaze. The mongrel was a stone's toss away. A silent understanding sent them rolling onto their stomachs. They began to crawl, crossing the width of the bridge to the opposite parapet, low and slow, for the second galley was far enough removed downriver for them to see its masts. No doubt the supporting vessel had men keeping watch on the bridge. It was a fine perch for an ambush, after all. The first ship completed its return crawl through the tunnel. Oates and Roar stayed hidden, eyes locked as if the squinty looks they exchanged confirmed what they were hearing. It sounded like the Frails were moving on. Oates cursed himself for a faithless fuck for doubting Burgos. He swallowed hard, his throat apple grinding inside his tense neck. Maybe Jackal would just let the ship sail on without... Cries of alarm erupted from the unseen deck below. So much for that. Oates signaled Roar with a thumb bobbed skyward. They rose slowly, peeking over the bridge's parapet to see what had the men below so riled and pointing toward their sister ship. There was a tumult on the far vessel, the men aboard surging toward the stern. Toward Jackal. He stood alone, dripping from the river, sword already throwing blood and water into the air as he met the first of the onrushing sailors. Rumors of the dread mongrel that couldn't be slain must have spread deep into Hispartha, for the crew did not send a handful against him. They came as one, a teeming line of raised voices and blades. The width of the galley allowed perhaps 5 to face him at a time, but they were more than 20 ranks deep. It would have overwhelmed a full-blood thick. But not Jackal. Tulwar flashing, reaping, cutting men down, cleaving several over the side to redden the river, he did not just stand. He advanced. Beneath Oates's nose, the confused men on the nearer galley hadn't yet reckoned what was happening aboard their fellow ship. The captain was spitting orders to close with the other vessel, to lend aid. The oars slid out, turning the galley into some many-legged insect. No more waiting. Oates stood fully upright, raising his stock bow. He had the captain marked, tracked him as the man strode toward the stern, yelling at the ship's pilot, who was wrestling with the wheel, cursing that it would not spin. That was Rance doing. Hidden in the neighboring arch, she'd been tasked to slip beneath the water and chain the rudder during the ship's second, slow passage beneath the bridge. The captain was still stomping down the deck, growling at the pilot, when his eyes happened to come up and rest upon Oates. The man's eyes barely had the chance to widen before the bolt punched through his noble face. Roar feathered the pilot the next instant, hitting him in the back just above the hip. It wasn't a killing shot, but it sent the screaming frail to the deck in writhing agony. "Down," Oates ordered, and they both ducked back behind the parapet, immediately crawling along its length, changing their position. The voices below boiled in a soup of startled anger and repressed fear. "The steering oarsman next," Roar told Oates as they hunkered and reloaded. "Even without the rudder, they can still come about. 2 men on either side at the stern."
"At the only pair of oars not below deck," Oates said. "I remember. Don't fucking miss."
They popped up again as one. Oates settled on his target and jerked the tickler, just as the crew began shouting warnings at the mongrel's reappearance. He killed his oarsman. For his part, Roar didn't miss. But he shot the same man.
"I had the fuck on the left!" Oates growled
when they were safely behind the parapet once more. Roar winced as the first return volley from the crew's stockbows splintered against the bridge with empty vengeance.
"Said I would take the one port side. You agreed."
"Hell's damned backy boat talk that don't no one understand proper," Oates complained as he reloaded.
He pointed down the bridge toward Sparthus.
"You go that way a good piece. Show yourself and loose if you can. I'll stay here. They won't expect us same place twice."
A few bolts cracked into the stone and whistled through the gaps as Roar crawled off, shots meant to keep the ambushers down. It was fucking working. As Oates waited for Roar to get into position, Rant appeared on the opposite parapet, closer to the shore. She hauled herself over the stones, soaked to the skin and a little out of breath. Oates wondered what she was doing making the climb. She hadn't been able to take a thrum on her swim to chain the rudder, so she was no use up here. She was supposed to have returned to Burgos. What was she about? The answer was in her face. Looking beyond Oates, Rant stared at her brother, concern writ across her entire, drenched body. Oates drew her attention with a wave and motioned for her to keep low and stay put. Roar had stopped, ready and waiting for a signal.
Damn.
Oates had been prepared to let the ill-tempered shipwright take the greater risk and show himself first. He was an unsure hand with a thrum, and it seemed fair to let him provide the distraction while Oates killed the remaining steersman. But if Roar took a bolt through the neck while his sister was looking on? Oates waved his fingers in front of his throat in a cutting motion, hoping Sluggard had taught these city-born mongrels the hoof signs. Pointing at himself, he raised one finger before pointing at Roar and raising a second.
"And that don't mean we tacked the keel and larboard the mizzen, you sailor cunt," Oates muttered just before he jumped up and trained his thrum.
He shot the steersman and was down again, just in time. The answering thrum bolt struck with such fury, bits of masonry popped over the parapet and rained on Oates. He'd only been up for a couple of heartbeats, yet he'd seen something. Hadn't he? Best check. Oates crawled quickly to the nearest fissure and risked a peek. The oars were still. The current had brought the galley farther from the bridge. With its rudder chained and the steersman dead, it had begun to drift at an angle, but not enough to bring the ship broadside to the bridge. The oars were still. Even with their captain dead, wouldn't these men want to flee the bridge and the attacks from above? Just then, the answer to the unknown portion of Jackal's plan struck Oates. It wasn't men at those oars. It was slaves. Mongrels. Rebelling in the only way they could by doing nothing, leaving their taskmasters stranded. The ambush was a chance for vengeance, for freedom. That had been Jackal's wager. And he'd just won. The far ship was coming, oars sweeping. Jackal remained on her deck, but he weren't the only half-orc any longer. A gaggle of mongrels stood around him, free from their chains and now brandishing the weapons of their captors, whooping as their fellows below continued to row, goaded not by the lash, but by hunger for a reckoning. The galley's crew had been left in the river, nothing but bobbing corpses and a few floundering survivors. Some frails on the crippled boat below saw what was coming and cried out in warning, but it served only to sow further calamity. Caught unawares between two threats, most panicked. A handful turned their stockbows to the approaching ship, but not enough to loose an effective volley. Oates rose and began planting bolts in exposed backs. Roar lent his thrum to the effort. They no longer sought cover, but simply loaded and loosed as fast as they could. It was heartening and terrible what two thrums on higher ground can do to men already rattled by bloodshed and lack of leadership. But every band had its hoodwink. That one cold fuck that kept his head no matter the depth of the shit. Oates saw him, a small man with a widow's peak. While his comrades stumbled about in a vain search for the scant cover on deck, this frail scurried purposefully toward a chest secured beneath the raised pilot's platform at the stern, stooping to retrieve something from the captain's corpse on the way. Oates didn't know what he was intent on retrieving, but reckoned it was best he didn't succeed. He took aim. A thrum on the deck loosed before he could, sending a bolt shattering into the parapet just below Oates's cods. He was pelted with splinters and mortar, forced to duck behind the stone. There was still fight in some on that doomed boat. Fortunate they didn't have better aim. Oates crab-crawled to a fresh position and found himself next to Rand. She had crossed the width of the bridge. Oates scowled when he reached her. "Told you to stay put." She didn't reply, her gaze still fixed on her brother. Oates took a steadying breath. He rose again, ready to kill Widow's Peak, but froze when he found his target. The man had gotten the chest open and was now placing a round object larger than his palm into a sizable leather sling. A fucking sapper's pot. Goose flesh sprouting, Oates snatched his stockbow to his shoulder and jerked the tickler. He rushed the shot. The bolt took Widow's Peak in the leg. Tough little fucker's stance buckled, but he remained upright and, with a quick whirl of the sling, sent the pot arcing up toward the bridge. Oates dove, falling atop Rant and covering her with his body. The pot shattered behind him, setting free a hollow roar and a blast of scorching heat as the Alunan fire ignited. Rolling, Oates looked and found the bridge's span nearly blocked by emerald flame. "Move!" he yelled, hauling Rant to her feet and pushing her away from the blaze. Another pot broke on the spot they fled, spilling more sticky flames. Oates and Rant grunted at the sudden painful heat, but escaped without any of the hellish substance splashing upon them. Rant was shouting her brother's name, fighting against Oates as he half-carried her to the other parapet. Roar's side of the bridge was blocked from view by an ever-growing wall of green fire and black smoke. "You need to get gone," Oates told Rant, struggling to prevent her from rushing down the length of the burning bridge. She continued to try to bull past him, squirming to break his grip.
I'm not going without him!
The hells you won't!
Oates picked Rand up and dropped her over the parapet into the river. She came up sputtering. Turning, Oates studied the bridge. There was a small gap between the inferno and the parapet on this side. Barely enough to ride a hog through, but it was there. Oates ran for the gap before he could think himself out of it. The heat seared his flesh, sucked the air from his lungs. He smelled his beard singe. He slowed only at the narrowest point, leaning away from the licking flames, trying not to think about Shed Snake's arm, and failing. The urge to flee the writhing hell, to fall backward over the parapet, and escape to the cool haven of the river's embrace was almost too much to resist. But then he was through. Just in time to see Roar drop his stockbow, dash the width of the bridge, vault the parapet, and cut a perfect dive into the water. Oates snorted and shook his head. One brother safe. Time to see about the other. It was all but over below. Jackal's liberated mongrels had already boarded the other boat, delighting in the slaughter. Jackal took on the captain's guard, the 10 men in plate armor. The reach of their halberds stalled him for about a heartbeat. Jack had always been quick, but these days he was the son of a panther. He slipped through the warding pole arms and cracked the men's close formation, cutting the first few down and pushing the rest over the side, allowing the weight of their harness to murder them. With no hope of mercy if they surrendered, the frails fought to the last man. And that last man proved to be Widow's Peak. Limping from the thrumb bolt in his leaking leg, the man kept his back pressed to the pilot's platform. The chest next to him was open. Oates couldn't see how many sapper's pots remained, but Widow's Peak held one in his hand, poised over the chest. The marauding mongrels stalled, seeing the danger. They formed a panting, blood-soaked ring around the man that could send them all to hells in one swift motion. But they refused to fear. They merely stood, watching with sullen eyes, waiting to see if the man had the spine to make good his threat. No pleas spilled from Widow's Peak. He didn't try to bargain for his life. He was dead and knew it. Perhaps he wanted a few more breaths, a few more moments. That's why he waited. Perhaps he wanted to savor the knowledge that he was going to burn the mongrels with him. Wanted that knowledge to take root in their minds. Whatever his reasons, he was content to linger on a skewered leg, arms hovering. Jackal pushed to the front of the mongrels, broke the ring to stand one step closer than the rest. He stayed as tight-lipped as Widow's Peak. They regarded each other just out of spitting distance. Oates pulled the tickler. It was a shot worthy of the chief, right in the man's ear. The sapper's pot fell from his hand and slapped into Jackal's, a cod's length from the chest. Hells, he was quick. But Oates had known that, counted on it.
Nice catch, Oates called down. Better shot, came Jack's grinning reply.
Several mongrels broke from the group and went down to the oar deck. Oates could hear them striking the chains from the galley slaves, swelling the numbers of the freed. Soon, the deck of the crippled ship was filled to bursting. The half-orc spat upon the dead, turned tear-streaked faces to the sky, and lifted their voices. They cheered for vengeance, for victory. They cheered for Jackal. Amid their adoration, Jack kept his gaze on Oates. They exchanged a nod before Oates turned away from the parapet. Lingering any longer was likely unwise. He was fairly certain the heat from the Alunan fire was going to cause the ancient bridge to collapse.
Chapter 15. Rain lashed the deck as Murrow emptied his guts over the side. Oates rubbed his back with one hand, held on to him with the other. The river had given the boy no trouble, but the open sea was another matter. He was turning color not long after the Mariposa left the delta of the Guadalquivir.
Welcome to the Titan's Ocean, Burgos had exclaimed,
and Murrow responded by spewing upon the captain's boots. This drew laughter from the old pirate, but the boy burst into tears. Between wails and heaves, he kept apologizing.
I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Thistle and Oates tried to explain he had done nothing wrong, that none were angry with him, but the pitiful pleas continued unabated, along with the retching. Thistle was laid low not long after, as the weather worsened and the waves grew spirited. Dizziness forced her to lie down beneath the aft shelter, so Oates stayed at the rail with Murrow, trying to keep his gaze away from the sickening sight of the undulating waves. They made him queasy, but so far he'd avoided fouling his beard. Burgos and his men went about their sailoring, immune to the roll of this new, wet world. Oates stared at the galley ahead, and wondered if Jackal was tossing his stomach ale. Likely not. He'd spent time on ships. Captain Jackal, the backy seafarer. That's what Polecat had called him when he returned home from the east. Oates smiled at the memory. The liberated galley slaves had certainly accepted Jackal as their captain, and he'd remained aboard one of the galleys, putting Roar in command of the other, now trailing the Mariposa. Rant had groused about being left on Burgos's little ship, but 300 half-orc men who hadn't seen a woman in hell's knew how long was too much of a risk to take. Oates had told Jackal he was pretty enough to be in danger too, and been only half-jesting. Whether they wanted to bugger him or not, the newly freed mongrel's gratitude toward Jackal didn't stretch to blind devotion. Try as he might, Jackal had failed to convince them to attack the rest of the fleet. Even with surprise and the arm of Atukan on their side, the galley mongrels declared the Draman impossible to take. The big warship was rowed by freemen, not slaves, boasting nearly 400 men-at-arms, a prow-mounted cannon above its steel ram, devil cocks, siphons that shot streams of Alunan fire, Rant explained, and someone aboard they called the Starving Man in hushed tones. Jackal couldn't get any more out of them about whoever that was. Wisely, he didn't press the matter. Those poor, abused fucks didn't need another taskmaster bullying them into submission. Better to temper their loyalty by allowing them to bask in their freedom and give them a new home. Jackal gave the order to sail for Mongrel's Cradle. Oates knew it chafed him, allowing the remainder of the Frail's boats to reach Kalbarka. Men, horses, gunpowder, food, all were going upriver to resupply the city, strengthening the Crown's foothold in Ulwandulas. To say nothing of this Starving Man, who sounded for all the hells like some damn wizard. Who else has such a name that full-grown half-breeds won't speak above a whisper? Rant approached, as sure-footed on the soaked, tilting deck as a goat on dry, flat land. On her way, she patted the bent back of Sluggard, the gesture more goading than supportive. The gritter was having as bad a time of it as Murrow. Worse, even. When Rant reached Oates, her mouth turned down in genuine sympathy as she watched Murrow struggle through another bout of dry heaves.
The weather's going to be worse by sundown, she said, not taking her eyes off the boy.
Oates could only grimace and try to put more affection into his rubbing hand. Earlier, Thistle had expressed hope that Murrow would be over the seasickness soon, but Burgos informed her in gentle tones that those with skull injuries, even old ones, often stayed stricken until they reached land.
You shouldn't have done that, Rant said. Toss me off the bridge.
Oates looked up to find her eyes now on him, and all sympathy gone. Like all of them, she was soaked by rain and spray, but where it turned Sluggard, Thistle, even Burgos and his crew into sodden wretches, Rant was made more vibrant by the ocean's touch. Oates found himself fixating on a drop along her cheekbone, tracing that hard line as it was blown by the wind.
So sorry,
Murrow moaned. You don't need to be, Oates said, hunkering in. He straightened, looked at Rant. Can't have you killing yourself for...
My brother? Fuck you. You don't get to decide that.
Orders are part of hoof life, Rant.
You need to get used to that. Chief won't suffer you choosing Roar over her commands. She'll do a heap worse than toss you off a bridge if you pull that shit.
Rant's jaw hardened.
Then she must not have a brother.
She does, Oates snorted. A twin, but he's... Well, they're not like Roar and you. But all hoof riders got brothers. A few sisters now, too. It won't help to favor one over the others.
Sure, Rant scoffed, and her head turned away from him to look in the direction of the lead galley. I'll be certain to give credence to that gull shit.
Oates opened his mouth, but she strode away before he could speak. Whatever Rant thought, Oates didn't favor Jackal over the others. Loved him more, but that was different. That was time at work, a childhood of games and fights, hurts and shared triumphs. That was memories. But if the chief said Oates should ride to Culprit's Aid, or Thresher's, or any bastard he'd known shorter than a lifetime, he wouldn't disobey, even if Jackal were in danger. Only, he had. He'd abandoned the bastards entirely, defied the Claymaster, and left the kiln. He'd fucking deserted. A death sentence under hoof code to stand with Jackal at Strava during the Betrayer Moon. He had other reasons, truths that bolstered his courage. There was the agreement with Zirko to uphold, that a rider go to help defend the Unyar's holy place against the horsecocks. There was the Claymaster's growing madness. At the time, Fetch herself had seemed an enemy. So he'd saddled Ugfuck and abandoned his hoof, his fellow bastards, his brothers, for Jackal. He'd gotten lucky, was spared reprisal because the Claymaster had lost his mind, and the hoof stood against him, voted a new chief. No need to punish a mongrel for deserting the gray bastards when that hoof was as dead as its leader. Oates couldn't fathom going against Fetching for Jackal's sake. But was that only because he loved her equally? That her being chief and not some other mongrel somehow balanced the scales and squared his loyalty? Being earnest, he reckoned it was likely. Rant certainly wouldn't ever have the depth of affection for the chief as she did her own blood. The same would be true for Roar. Perhaps it was asking too much of them to dilute those bonds with oaths to a bunch of mongrels they did not know or love. Being more earnest, it didn't matter if they did. Fetch needed a fleet. She had mongrels she trusted to do the hard fighting, but not one who knew how to build warships. It was likely Rant and Roar would never be separated. They could remain at Mongrel's cradle together, the war at a distance, and never be forced to choose between family and hoof. Oates wished that for them. Murrow's body had calmed, even if the waves had not. He was listless in Oates's clutches, though he continued to mumble his apologies. "You got nothing to be sorry for, sweet boy," Oates whispered as he gathered him up, letting him rest a moment in his arms before carrying him beneath the shelter. Thistle stirred as he ducked beneath the awning, rain drumming against the tight canvas.
"Need to get him dry," she said,
her voice tight with discomfort. Wincing, she made to sit up, but Oates put a hand on her knee, wordlessly assuring her he had the task in hand. He got Moreau stripped and dry, the exhausted child swaying the entire time. Oates pulled a fresh shirt over the miniature drunkard's head, steeling himself for the possibility that the boy's vomiting would return the instant he was dressed. Fortune spared them both. At last, Oates laid Murrow down. He wasn't exactly resting comfortably, the occasional whimper or moan keeping Oates at ready with a bucket, but it was a damn improvement. He kept vigil while Thistle and Murrow slept, trying to ignore the motion of the ship and biting down on the inside of his lip. Fuck. Wasn't working. He had the bucket, but this was going to be loud. Innards beginning to pulse, Oates hurried out on deck. He was astride from the rail when he popped, but the force of the stream covered the distance. At least the rain helped rinse his beard. He hung over the side, spitting the last awful traces into the chop. Felt like maybe that was it.
Damn good timing.
Oates looked up to find Burgo standing beside him. The weathered outlaw directed Oates's attention with his squint. The sun remained imprisoned by clouds, yet to the north, a great spur of dark rock could still be seen, thrusting up from the teeming sea, king of a gray world.
"The Tower of Herathos," Burgo said, his rough voice adding deserved weight to the name.
Oates had never laid eyes upon the massive promontory that marked the southern tip of Ulwundulas, even from land. Through the occluding curtain of rain and spray, he could still spy the vestiges of the castle built upon and carved from the rock. Oates couldn't reckon how long it had stood, but his Hispartha once thought the fortification would deter the orcs from crossing the gut. The great incursion proved them wrong, and the fix razed the castle. Now it was nothing but a roost for gulls. Sluggard slid down the rail to join them, awe chasing some of his misery away.
"Never thought I'd see it."
"Then you won't want to miss this," Rand called from the ship's other side. Oates knew what it was before he turned. If the Tower of Herathos was before them, the view south could contain only one sight. Dargest, the Dark Lands, home of the orcs. At this distance, the coast was but a foreboding shadow, yet the storm seemed incapable of hiding the twin peaks of Rukam Ulnul, the Broken Woman, said to have once been a single mountain cloven by sorcery. The jagged formation stood opposed to its northern adversary. Seeing them now, it appeared to Oates as if the woman had once intruded too close and been chastised by the tower, smote and split in two, before retreating across the narrow strait.
"The guts, what, 2 leagues? Sluggard asked, chin tucked to keep the act of speaking from emptying his stomach.
"More," Burgos replied.
Sluggard choked down a small belch, glared at the leaden, roiling waters.
"And the fix swim it.
Hells." Oates felt his throat tightening, and not against a need to be sick. Orcs weren't the only ones to swim that menacing expanse. His mother had done it, twice. The first time carrying a babe in her arms, the second carrying another in her belly. Oates stood on a pitching vessel between the land of his creation and the land of his birth, and was very grateful that the storm hid his unexpected tears. The weather turned hateful as they sailed eastward through the strait. The sky hanging above their prow was a mass of brooding thunderheads.
"This'll be rough," Rand declared.
She wasn't wrong. The rain slapped the decking in sheets. Waves pounded the hull as the ship crested and crashed through the turbulent swells. The seamen knew their art, hustling about in the downpour and wrestling with the rigging. The winds thrashed above, punishing the sails for their effrontery. But the men fought back with rope and knot, each bearded face a waterfall. They were blown closer to the rocks of Ulwundulas than was comfortable. Burgos and Ferran strove mightily at the steering oars, recruiting Oates and Rant to aid them. The Tower of Herathos loomed above now, its jagged foundations poised to break the ship should it stray farther. The churning clouds and the lurching motion of the deck conspired to form the illusion that the tower was descending, a headman's blade beginning its irrefutable arc. Oates tore his eyes away from the dreadful sight. Beneath the shelter, Thistle clung to Murrow. The boy was sick again, half hidden by the bucket. Oates held up a hand, telling them to stay put. Fool-ass thing to do. Thistle would never attempt to reach the rail, where the sea's dragging paws were eager for the sudden tilts that would spill the hapless overboard. A sudden cheer went up from the crew, boisterous enough to defy the storm's roar. Burgo shouted something, but only Rant caught the words.
"We're through!" she exclaimed, smile flashing in the gloom of the squall. "We've reached the Deluge Sea!"
The rains harried them for the remainder of the day. The night was sleepless, sick, and storm-tossed. The coastal mountains allowed no safe harbor, so the ship remained upon the waves. Oates remained awake,
splitting the long watches between his ailing companions beneath the aft shelter and the unhappy hogs in the creaking hold. At last, past midday, the storm died, leaving the sun entombed in a charcoal sky. It broke through the next morning, just in time to brighten the view of Mongrel's cradle. "The Sons of Perdition are poorly named," Sluggard said, taking in the broad bay, the milky sands of the beach. "This is a fucking paradise." Oates gave an appreciative laugh.
"Reckon they knew what they were about. Who would join the Skull Sowers or the Shards when you can be a paradise boy?"
Beyond the bay and the cock-hardening beach, the sun's port town of Salduba beckoned. The buildings sat the land rising away from the coast, a haven of tiled roofs nestled behind a strong wall. Above them, on the highest rise, stood the cradle itself. The castle's curtain wall ringed the wide promontory, square watchtowers adding to its height. Behind the fortress, the landscape continued to sprawl, sloping toward the foothills that eventually grew into the hoar tops, invisible at this distance. Those peaks were so tall, it was rare that they were without their snowy caps, despite the hellish climbs of Uwundulas. Still, they were most often called the Hoars, mongrels being who they are. Mountains protecting a castle, that castle guarding a town, that town with its own wall, all of it with access to the sea. The sun's home was more than a paradise. It was a sanctuary and a bastion. There was a reason father's boys had a reputation for being a bit soft. Still, this would be the last place to fall, so long as the Frails came by land. By sea was another matter, but Fetch had taken steps early. 7 Tradrian galleys patrolled the bay. 2 more were docked. The other 4 were farther out, ranging the deluged and watching for the Crown's fleets. A pair had come upon the war galleys and the Mariposa earlier in the day, spotted their white flags, and approached with caution. A few shouted words from Jackal sent them on to deliver advance word to the Sons. The corsairs had been paid with coin from the Pit of Homage, secured by Oates and Anvil, before Hisparatha had quite wrapped its head around the fact that the lots were in revolt. It was all Jackal's notion. He had made some friends among the freebooter captains during his travels, the type of friends who needed a steady stream of coin, but it was better than leaving their asses exposed. Oates had to swallow a moan of relief when he stepped onto the dock. The stable wood felt queer beneath his boots, gave him a moment's lightheadedness, but it swiftly passed. Carrying Murrow, he smiled at Thistle and puffed out his cheeks.
"Glad that's over."
She squeezed his arm in agreement and caressed the back of the boy's head.
"I need to see to Ugg," Oates said.
Thistle held her arms up to receive Murrow.
"I'll take him."
With Sluggard's help, the hogs were unloaded without incident, despite their eagerness to quit the confines of the hold. Oates paused a moment at the end of the ramp, holding firm to Ugg's swine yanker.
"Thanks,"
he called up to Burgos, still on deck. The man gave a strange little gesture, something between a wave and a salute. It was almost dismissive. Almost.
"What will you do now?" Oates pressed.
Burgos leaned on the railing and surveyed the beach. He took a slow, deep breath.
"Fucking retire,"
Oates laughed as he walked away. Thistle waited at the end of the pier, leaning back against the sleeping weight of Murrow. Father stood with her, a gaggle of men and mongrels a little removed. Oates had had few dealings with the son's aged hoofmaster, but Fetch trusted him far as she trusted any of the other chiefs. Coming from a neighboring pier, Jackal reached the little gathering a dozen strides ahead of Oates. He exchanged a few words with Father.
"She wants to see us," Jackal told Oates as soon as he was near. "She's here?"
Oates wasn't sure why it surprised him, or why the fact filled him with a sudden, gnawing worry. Something in Father's craggy face, perhaps. By the hard set of Jackal's jaw, he felt it too.
"I'll have my boys see to your mounts," Father said,
motioning for his mongrels to come forward. Oates put a hand on Thistle's back. They need to be shown to my mother. Father nodded.
I'll take them myself.
Before you do, Jackal said, cocking his eyes at the Hispartan war galleys, make sure you have adequate numbers to watch over our new blood. They're grateful and glad to be free, but it could turn wild if they're loose in the town.
I'll have tents erected on the beach, Father replied, and a dozen stew pots. Slaves will desire food over women and wine, at least for this first night. We get their bellies full, give them a night's sleep free from chains and the splinters of a rower's bench. I wager we'll avoid incident. Give us time to spot any troublemakers in the bargain. By noon tomorrow, I'll have a more permanent place arranged.
Satisfied, Jackal turned to Oates. Let's go. Oates handed Ugfuck over to a waiting sun slophead and gave Thistle a parting look before following Jackal's quick strides toward town. It felt good to walk after the voyage, even if the pace was causing his muscles to burn. Jackal took the stone steps leading up from the wharf three at a time. Oates settled for two. A parade of merchant stalls awaited them at the top. Fishmongers and tinkers, costers and rope makers plied their trades in the shadow of Salduba's wall. It was more folk in one place than Oates had seen in a long while, not since his days fighting in the pit in earnest. He barely had time to take in the sight. Jackal rushed past a clutch of cooing dockside whores without a glance, surging up the cobbled slope toward the town gate. He waited beneath the arch for Oates to catch up and was off again, unchallenged by the slop sentries posted with spears. Father was wise to take their barbarians. Folk risked getting trampled if Jack had been a hog. Inside the walls, Oates discovered that the Sons of Perdition weren't the only thing ill-named in the lots. The bastard's old town of Winsome was a ramshackle clump of hovels compared to Salduba. The merchant stalls from outside solidified into the storefronts of craftsmen. Many of the whitewashed structures proved to be from the time of the Imperium, but unlike those in Sparthus or Kalbarka, these had not fallen completely to ruin. Columned porticos were melded to the newer buildings with brickwork, dwellings of timber and render added as second stories atop smooth white marble foundations. The shops and homes of Salduba were as mongrel as the hoof that protected them, but they'd been maintained with such care that, as a whole, they formed a harmonious, lively, and prosperous picture. Father's love for his hoof, as well as his reputation for being a scrupulous old fuck, was impossible to miss even at an ass-cramping hustle. Jackal clearly knew the way. He hurried them through town, threading their path around the busy market square using clean little side streets, the houses on either side joined by lines of hanging wash. They passed roving bands of playing children, the laughing, shouting swarms dodging around their unrelenting progress. Old folk tended small gardens of succulents in the cozy spaces behind their homes, pausing to watch Jackal and Oates bowl by. They came to a dormant fountain and, beyond, an ancient little bridge crossing a dry channel, both the bloodless survivors of the Imperium's lost water-moving lore. Four strides took them across the span and into deep shade. The fortress of Mongrel's Cradle was near enough now to intrude upon the sky. Jackal swung back to the main thoroughfare, less crowded this close to the castle. Again they hiked a slope, and Oates was sweating a bit when they reached the Cradle's gatehouse. They were stalled only long enough for Jackal to announce himself. He was well known here, he and the chief having split their winter between Mongrel's Cradle and the Castile, flying between the two on the back of Fetch's ensorcelled roque. Oates realized that was the reason he had been surprised Fetch was here. She hadn't flown out to greet them. Word would have reached her well before they docked. As soon as they entered the castle yard, it was the sight of the great bird that forced Jackal and Oates to a halt. Hell's overburdened, Jackal hissed. The huge raptor lay atop a thin pile of straw, foul with blood and whatever dark, sticky humors seeped from its many wounds. Most of the bed was made of the bird's own feathers. Molting, the roach's head was all but denuded, as was its neck and broad patches along its back. The exposed flesh, pale and dimpled, transformed the once fearsome creature into a pitiful, loathsome thing. Worst of all, it was still alive. Its head moved languidly, while its sprawled wings jerked with sudden, occasional convulsions. Slowly, Jackal and Oates approached, passing a pair of slopheads standing watch well removed from the beast with kerchiefs tied about their faces to blunt the stench. Up close, the damage was a living horror. The wounds weren't cuts or punctures. They were suppurating sores. Even as Oates watched, a long, narrow blister along the roach's neck writhed and burst, disgorging a wad of pus. Oates recoiled, seeing the ichor played host to a mass of wriggling larvae. He'd thought the kingdom of flies cavorting in the yard had been attracted by the soiled straw, but now he realized they were birthed from the roach's tortured body. The suffering beast's eye managed to emerge from beneath the swollen, maggot-caked lid. For half a heartbeat, that yellow, feverish orb reflected Oates's and Jackal's appalled faces. "Why hasn't it been put down?" Jackal demanded of one of the slops. "War chief says no," came the kerchief-muffled reply. Jackal spun and hot-heeled for the keep. They passed several sworn sons on their way up a corner tower. None even uttered a greeting. The air of the place was one of tense uncertainty, no doubt brought by the chief's arrival. Two doors stood opposite each other at the top of the stairs. Jackal went to the right and nearly pushed straight through, but caught himself at the last moment. Taking a breath, he knocked.
"Fetch, it's us."
"Come."
They found her leaning over a table carpeted with maps, quill moving with a fury. She was grimy with old mud, soot, and blood. The room stank, but Oates was relieved it was only the odor of an unwashed body and not the reek of corruption that filled his nostrils in the castle yard. "What happened?" Jackal asked. She didn't answer, kept writing until she finished. Scrawling out messages for carrier birds always took an age because you had to write so damn small, and in code these days. Tossing the quill down, Fetch straightened, rolling the missive. She picked up another, already in its tiny bone case, and moved toward the door.
"Freishold has fallen," she said, as she passed between Oates and Jackal. Throwing the door open, she yelled down the stairs, "I need a runner!"
Fetch waited in the jam for the sun to arrive. She held up her right hand.
"Strava,"
her left.
"Notch. Know where he is?"
"Shatterhand, war chief."
Fetch handed the small cases over.
"Go."
Her hand darted out as he was half-turned and caught his brigand.
"Wait."
She marched back to the table. Oates saw the anger in her, that special kind only born when she had forgotten something. Fetch retrieved a waxed leather satchel and went back to the sun.
"This needs to get to Kulhoun. Tell father I want Medler to take it and two other nomads of his choice. Go."
When the runner was gone, Fetch swung the door closed.
"Frails had moved faster than we thought. Thricehold was surrounded by the time I arrived," she said, returning to the table. 600 cavalry. 3 times as many infantry. They'd brought bombards by ship, but the gunstones couldn't reach the walls."
Oates felt a fool ass. He'd had a moment of relief hearing that, before remembering she'd already said Thricehold had fallen. It wasn't the most formidable stronghold, but it had been constructed atop what was said to be a dormant volcano, with only one path of ascent for man or beast. No surprise Hisparth's siege guns didn't have the range, but what good was that? This story already had an ending. Fetch's report continued with blunt rapidity.
"They were going to have to assault us. With those numbers, they would overwhelm the walls as soon as they reached them. I had Mero send birds to the Skull Sowers and the Tide, ordering Tomb and Borlip to bring their riders. Wouldn't be enough to break the siege, but they'd offer enough to make the Frails fear they were about to be caught between Thricehold and all the mongrels in the lots. Fetch's nostrils flared. She wasn't looking at them. I figured I'd discourage an assault, buy us some time, let the Frails know what waited for them at the top of the peak. I flew in, hit their infantry lines hard, and flew out before the Cavaleros could arrive. Did it 5, 6 times, always aiming for where they were spread the thinnest. But that's what they were counting on. Fetch leaned and rested her knuckles on the tabletop, bent by the memory. There was something wrong with the men I struck next. I saw it right at the end of the dive, but too late. A third of the men fled, but the rest just stood there. They were already dead. Corpses dressed in armor and propped by boards. The Roke tore into them before I could stop it. The bodies burst. This fucking storm of flies poured out, more than those men could have contained. I knew it was sorcery, a damn trap. We were blind, caught in the swarm. It blocked the sun. I tried to flee, but the flies kept us down. Millions of weightless pests were crushing us, choking us. Fetching's voice was steady, but her arms had begun to quaver against the clenching of her fists. "How'd you escape?" Oates asked, hoping his question, his voice, would nudge her out of reliving that hell. "I wouldn't have," Fetch replied through clenched teeth. "If she hadn't come to gloat." "She?" Jackal's voice was flat. "The cunt conjurer. She walked through the swarm, so thin she looked to be starving." Oates and Jackal shared a disturbed look. The galley slaves had mentioned a starving man. Hells, how many of these fuckers were in the lots? Fetch only had eyes for the table, didn't see. She barked a laugh. "She carried a fucking spade, sharp at the end like some kind of gong farmer, filthy enough to be one. Even through the buzzing, I could hear her. She was humming, like a child would with a song they haven't learned the words to. The Roke was dying. I could feel it. I managed to dismount. Fucking sorceress had the grit to motion at me, coax me to come at her. So I did." Fetch's eyes came up, bright and hateful. "I fought her in the eye of that loathsome storm and cut her fucking head off." "Damn right," Jackal said. "It was close, Jack," Fetch said, head giving the smallest shake. She huffed. "Skinny little gash with a shovel almost sent me to the hells. Her flies died before her head hit the mud, and I was surrounded by men eager to finish the job their wizard began. The Roke got us out by a cunt hair, but the Frails must have sounded the assault the moment I fell for their trap. They were already coming up the slope and in thrum range of the gates. The thrice freed held them off long enough for me to get there, but even with the narrow approach, there were too many to repel. At the end, Mero insisted on the creed. He ordered his boys to mount and had the gates opened. And ours, our boys, insisted to ride with him." The pain in the chief's words knifed Oates in the heart. "Ours, our boys. Goss, Lopo, and Bakir. Turo. The bastard slopheads." "They rode out," Fetch pushed on. "Charged right down the throat of the Frails, hit them with a tusker like I've never seen. I did what I could to aid them, and damned if they didn't make it down that slope. 72 mongrels when they started out, and most reached the flats. After that, the Cavaleros were too many. The wizard hadn't killed me, but I was weak. Something carried by those flies. I was feverish, limbs like melted tallow. I tried, but I couldn't be everywhere." For an instant, the chief broke. One choked sob and a pair of tears. She bit back and swallowed the one, wiped away the two, and her grief was over. Oates let his own tears fall. "The Roke was ailing worse than I," Fetch went on, clearing her throat. "Still, I managed to meet the skulls on their way to help and turn them back. The tide were a day behind them. I continued on here, but the Roke almost didn't make it over the hoartops."
"Why haven't you killed it?" Jackal asked, succeeding in keeping the question from being an accusation.
Fetch straightened, took a breath. "I was hoping it would recover. I have. Ruin shared his resilience with his dogs, but..."
"I killed those dogs with magic," Jackal admitted. Fetch gave a grim nod.
"And the Roke isn't getting better. Whatever power it shares with me may just be keeping it alive and suffering. But I don't know what will happen if it dies. It could spew that rot halfway to the harbor. It can't fly, or I would have taken it far from here. I didn't know it was infested with that shit, or I wouldn't have brought it at all. The sores didn't appear until after."
"None here have fallen sick," Jackal said. Fetch shook her head.
"But we know Hisparatha gets a stiff cod fucking about with magic plagues."
The thought made Oates' skin crawl. He scratched at his beard to hide it. "I'll go have a look at the Roke," Jackal said. "There's a chance I can figure something out." Even Jack's bone-deep bravado didn't lend that statement much weight, but Fetch dipped her chin.
"Do it."
Jackal didn't move right away. When he did, it was to come around the desk, place a hand on the back of Fetching's neck, and rest his forehead against hers. That was it. A swift, necessary comfort. "Just need to get some things from our bedchamber," he said, letting her go. Jackal went out the door. They heard him enter the chamber across the landing.
"You look better," Fetch told Oates. "Not great, but better."
"And you look like shit. Issa, when's the last time you..." He was cut off by a thumping in the other room. Hells, he decided to milk his cod or some... The second, heavier thud stopped his words and sent Fetch rushing out of the room. Oates was on her ass. The door before them was ajar. Fetch drew a katara and charged through, skidding to a stop. Looking over her head, Oates felt goose flesh crawl up his scalp. Jackal was down, and the pale, scarred, hairless, dead-eyed mongrel standing over him was very, very familiar. "Told him he wouldn't best me twice," Hoodwink rasped. Chapter 16. Oates wanted to laugh. Hoodwink wasn't known for his jests. Hells, he wasn't known for speaking. What he was known for was being a snake-blooded killer, famed and feared for it, in earnest. His name was perhaps the most famous in the lots prior to the chief's rise. Sworn riders and nomads alike had told stories about him for years. He'd ridden with just about all of them at one time or another, his body bearing the scars of his oustings from half the hoofs. Brother slaying was just one of the offenses he was rumored to have committed. Jackal didn't look dead, though, just out cold. Proper comeuppance for taking Hoodwink unawares in Dogfall after Winsome fell. Hood hadn't been pleased with that, him being renowned for having